The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Time for our Friday forum in what has been a very busy week, during which, of course, a new Pope was elected. We learned of the impact that Trump's tariffs may have on Ireland and, of course, his quote-unquote major trade deal with the UK, which hit the front pages. Joining me now, Fianna Fáil Senator Lorraine Clifford-Lee, Sinn Féin MEP Lynn Boylan and Irish Daily Mail political correspondent Sarah McGuinness. Good morning and welcome one and all. Reaction to the Pope, first of all.
Well, as you said, it's been wall-to-wall coverage, Pat, and we were just speaking here ourselves about how watching him come out yesterday, there was kind of like a, oh, who is he? So everyone has been scrambling to kind of read up on him as much as possible. But I mean, you know, he seems to be quite aligned to Pope Francis in his beliefs, which might be a cause of frustration for some quarters in the church and a cause of relief in others. The general consensus is like he's a bit more quietly progressive than Francis was. He hasn't kind of been as vocal, but in terms of where he lies, in terms of he is very much similar thinking in his stance on climate and migration and social justice.
So trouble ahead with the Trump administration, one suspects.
Yeah, probably. Well, considering he was out outwardly criticising J.D. Vance, he retweeted, as I'm sure many of our listeners will see at this point, an article with the headline, J.D. Vance is wrong, Jesus doesn't ask us to rank our love for others. So he's quite openly anti-MAGA. And yeah, I think that will be...
MAGA's not pleased with him. Some of the stuff I've seen online, the giving out jars about the new Pope, which has got to be a good thing.
Oh.
If MAGA's unhappy, then...
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how everyone's doing.
Lorraine, you know something of the heritage of this Pope. It's very interesting.
Well, the source of all knowledge these days, TikTok tells me that he has a Creole and Haitian heritage. His grandparents come from Louisiana and Haiti and were black. And this is an interesting dynamic, I suppose, to have that kind of background, migrated upwards to Chicago. So he has that kind of migration story. He spent a lot of his ministry in South America, in Peru, speaks Spanish and spoke Spanish from the balcony yesterday. So I think it's a really exciting time to be a Catholic, to enter this new phase. A lot of relief around the world as well, especially when authoritarian regimes are on the rise. This is a man who's firmly rooted in social justice. And it's interesting as well that he chose the name Leo, because the last Pope Leo actually was very much on the side of workers and spoke about how people are human and not just cogs in a capitalist regime. And that's a very interesting point of note. And I think the Vatican is sending a clear message, not just to the United States, but around the world, that Christian values of being humble, supporting the poor, the vulnerable and migrants is where the church is at. So
now,
it's
Lynn,
to be welcomed.
It's interesting when you see what Trump is doing in putting people in places that will have long-term influence, whether it's judges, and he did it in his first term as well, and he's put the conservatives in the Supreme Court and so on. It looks like Pope Francis was doing the same kind of thing.
It does indeed. And as a non-practicing Catholic, I have to say that I think, like, watching from outside, Francis did some incredible work and was really strong on climate change and also about making the Catholic Church more warm for the LGBT community and around migration, but also on peace. I think he's a very canny operator, and this is clearly, you know, a very smart move on his part. He only appointed the Pope Cardinal, I think, was it a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
You know, knowing his views on Donald Trump and post-Donald Trump election. So I think it is the last throw of the dice of Pope Francis was to make sure that we continued in that direction.
I mean, he stacked the deck with his own cardinals and the rule, you can't vote if you're over 80. Sorry, you can be Pope if you're over 80, but you can't vote.
He did stack the deck. And also this Pope is only 69. So there's also that question of that he, you know, he'll be there a long time to enact some of that programme. And again, as Lorraine said, the fact that he chose the name Leo is really important as well, given that Pope Leo the 13th was such a strong advocate.
Now, this
for
morning
rights.
On the programme, I was wondering, you know, he spoke Italian and he spoke Spanish. And I wondered why, given that English is the world language now, if it's not your first language, it's generally speaking your second language, no matter what part of the world you're in. If you're Swedish, if you're Polish, the second language tends to be English. So we wondered why he didn't say Kupla Fuka Los Berla, but he didn't. But this morning he did. He celebrated his first Mass in the Sistine Chapel as Bishop of Rome. And this is what he had to say this morning.
I'll begin with a word in English, and the rest is in Italian. But I want to repeat the words from the responsorial psalm. I will sing a new song to the Lord because he has done marvels. And indeed, not just with me, but with all of us, my brother cardinals, as we celebrate this morning, I invite you to recognize the marvels that the Lord has done, the blessings that the Lord continues to pour out upon all of us. Through the ministry of Peter, you have called me to carry that cross and to be blessed with that mission. And I know I can rely on each and every one of you to walk with me as we continue as a church, as a community of friends of Jesus, as believers, to announce the good news, to announce the gospel.
Lorraine?
Pat, I think it's really interesting that he spoke in Spanish yesterday after speaking in Latin and Italian. We know that the people that are the most focus of the Trump regime, the crackdown on immigration, are Spanish speaking. They're from Central and South America, and they're feeling very, very frightened, those actually living in Central and South America and the ones living in the United States. So I think it was a direct message to them to say that he is on their side. And I think we have a lot to be hopeful for.
Do you think Trump will get the point?
Well, if he's clever, he will, because the amount of Catholics in America of voting age and are registered to vote is really, really significant. So if he's a clever politician, he's not going to...
Well, he's already really insulted them by posting that photograph of himself in the Pope's...
And many Catholics in America have said they are appalled by that.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier several times during the week, J.D. Vance, allegedly a devout Catholic...
He's not. He's a convert. And I think even his trip to the Vatican to meet just hours before Pope Francis passed away, I thought his behaviour was disgraceful. He didn't even know how to address the Pope properly or any of the cardinals that were with him. And there's this real move with the far right to Catholicism in the United States. And this is a rebuke. What they're thinking is... the Catholic doctrine is not. And I think it's a strong, clear message to those guys to go back and relook at where they are and their Christian values.
But let's stay with Trump for a moment. Lynn, the trade deal with the UK, what do you make of it? I mean, is it substantial at all?
Well, I think where my concern with the trade deal with Britain and America, I mean, and look, they're entitled to do their trade deals. That was part of what they wanted out of Brexit. But it's my concern is around particularly food standards. And I know they've done this deal with agriculture.
There's some dilution of food standards on beef.
Well, you see, this is the problem because Britain is also trying to negotiate a trade deal with the EU, and the EU wants to buy British weapons. But are the EU going to sacrifice food standards as well? So you could have a situation where Britain is, you know, brings its standards down overall so that it can trade with the America and also trade with the EU. That has huge ramifications for the Irish agricultural sector, both north and south. So that's where I would have a real concern around the trade deal. They're entitled to do their trade deal, but we can't see any reduction in food standards because they will come through the north and down into the south.
Mm. Sarah, what do you make of what's going on with Trump? I mean, we have these talks in China or in Switzerland with the Chinese delegation. And it's interesting how each side will try to characterize them. You know, they're not really head-to-head negotiations. And Xi won't call Trump until the deal is done.
Yeah, it is interesting. I suppose, like, that's kind of, I think really that's kind of the kernel of this whole geopolitical split. It's US versus China. You know, like, they're kind of, everyone else just kind of seems to be collateral damage in it all, including the EU. So I think it'll be really interesting to see. It's been quite tight-lipped so far, but, like, it's kind of one of those things where I'm not sure if we can fully trust whatever's going to come out from either side, if you get me. But it, like, I suppose what I've kind of found interesting in this is the kind of tension around pharma and the fact that that hasn't yet been put on the table by either side, by the US or the EU. So it's kind of like, I feel like once pharma is thrown in there, we'll kind of know that things are going, like, getting really, really, really serious.
Yeah, the problem for the United States in pharma is that a lot of the stuff we send them are raw ingredients for subsequent manufacture. So if they don't have raw materials, they're not going to be able to make the stuff.
But I think what hopefully, and maybe, you know, sometimes I say, am I an optimist, but that the American public will start to push back. I mean, we're seeing that in the polling analysis with Donald Trump. You know, if you're going into the likes of Macy's and those stores who are saying we won't have products to put on the shelves in a couple of weeks if this continues. You know, Amazon, I know they've rolled back, but they were saying they were going to put on the prices. This is directly responsible for the tariffs. So I think there will be a backlash, you know, because it's he promised them that he was going to bring down the price of eggs. And in fact, all he's done is he's increasing the price of everything. So I'm hoping that there will be that backlash, because Donald Trump keeps an eye on the polls. He's a narcissist. Yeah. He's really interested in public opinion.
But I mean, to have someone in a position that he has, the most powerful person in the world, who just lies, I mean, barefaced, you know, the price of gas is $1.98. In most places, it's over $3. You know, he just tells lies. What do you do with someone like that?
But it's the constant stream of this narrative that's it's confusing people. The journalists can't report on it. You have journalists that are being barred from the White House because they won't buy into this narrative, calling the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America.
And the Arabian Peninsula yesterday, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's funny. The Persian Gulf is going to be called the Gulf of Arabia now.
Yeah. Like, it's just really like Orwellian stuff that's going on. And we here in Europe need to stand firm and stand to our values. But the American public, they're consumerists. When they go into Walmart next August to kit their kids out for returning to school and the shops are bare, the shelves are bare, they won't be able to buy T-shirt, shoes, trousers for their kids to go back to school. I think then there will be a real tipping point. And for somebody as rich as Donald Trump to just blithely say to the American public, well, maybe you can just make do with $2 as opposed to $30. Like, that is outrageous.
Like, really making outrageous. Do with two guns rather than 30 guns. I'd like to.
That might be more helpful.
A bit of progress.
I don't see him or his inner circle taking a step back in their standard of living, but he's expecting ordinary Americans to do so. I think we're going to see a change.
Yeah, but there's no depths to which this man won't sink. For example, he's just fired the Library of Congress librarian, who was the first African-American woman to get that job. She's gone. Just appointed a new prosecutor. This woman, she's a Fox News host, former prosecutor herself. You know, there's no end to it. No end to it. And if you keep doing this, they're presuming that the Democrats, if they should get in, that they won't willy-nilly fire all these people appointed by Trump.
Well, if they organise themselves, they're being very quiet at the moment.
They're too decent to do it. You know, they would never just dump people out of a job. But
when you look at the statistics coming out of our passport office about the huge surge in Americans applying for an Irish passport, and I just know from talking to people in the United States, a lot of them are getting out of there. And that's actually very worrying for their future. Will the Democrats be able to put up a fight?
And the question is,
given
what's going on, and we earlier heard on the program about in Oklahoma, the kids in high school are being given a module on conspiracy theories in the 2020 election. You know, the cheating that went on and mail-in ballots not being valid. All this, they're teaching this in schools now, so they're conditioning the kids. The future voters into thinking that the election was unfair when every authoritative source says no, it was absolutely free and fair. So will the midterms be fair? Will he cheat on those? Will he gerrymander and...
Well, I mean, and you need the Democrats. I'm so surprised at how quiet they have been. I mean, I know Bernie Sanders and AOC are touring the country and getting large crowds to it because they're putting forward a real alternative, you know, and giving hope to people. Because I think this is the problem we're seeing across Europe as well, and that shift to the far right is that you need to give people hope. These are, you know, communities that are hard-pressed, cost-of-living crisis, you know, I mean, and they're looking for somebody with answers. Donald Trump gave them easy solutions, but they're seeing now that they're actually paying the price rather than seeing the price of things coming down. Their life has been made more difficult. So I think that we need to all of us need to take that lesson, that we need to be selling the politics of hope, that there is an alternative to this and to those working class communities. But you're not seeing it from the Democratic Party at the moment. And that's really concerning.
Yeah. I mean, the question of who leads the Democratic Party, it's kind of hard at the moment. Gavin Newsom, probably not. Maybe Governor Pritzker, maybe.
Gretchen Whitmer.
Well, she went to the White House and made a fool of herself. Trump made a fool of her a bit.
She walked herself into it a bit, but she has been impressive, and it's somebody from that neck of the woods that might actually make an impact. But I think we're very far away from the from the presidential
election. But
you need
to start shaping up. You know, Mark Kelly, for example, a very impressive guy, former astronaut and so on. They have a number of impressive people, but there's no clear leader. Mm. Like, who's the leader of the Democratic
Party? But they're at sixes and sevens because there's so much going on. I think they can't focus on where they need to focus on, and that's a real problem for not only for the party, but the future of all these institutions that you outlined, Pat.
All right, we'll move on to the most pressing topic of the week, the skort versus the shorts. I don't know whether any of you have played sports that require skorts or shorts.
A long time ago.
Okay, but I don't understand what makes it so uncomfortable, number one. But I also can't see how the Camogie Association have let it get this far.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, well, one, yes, it's more, it restricts your movement. And especially if you're playing a physical game like Camogie, which is physical, there is that element of it being uncomfortable. There's also just the optics of when you're the rough and tumble of a Camogie game, you fall over and you're, you know, it's still a skirt, it goes up. Do you know what I mean? So like, you've heard Camogie players saying their first instinct is to pull, you know, to pull it down because the photographs do look like your skirt is up. Do you know what I mean? So they don't train in skorts, they train in shorts, and they should just be allowed to have the choice. If someone wants to wear a skort, they can wear it. But the majority, as we know, 83% said they would prefer to they want the choice of wearing shorts. For me, I just can't fathom what the Camogie Association was thinking in terms of their response to this. I mean, it just, again, the optics of, and this is not picking on the referee because he was put in a very difficult position, but the optics of a man sending two women back into the dressing rooms and telling them what they were to wear in 2025 is not a good look. And that should have been the wake-up call for the Camogie Association.
It's interesting, though, that what Dublin and Kilkenny did, they made a decision that they would create this standoff with the referee, but they also made a decision, both teams, that if it came to calling off the game, they would back down. Now, what's happening this weekend, there's going to be no backing down, it would appear.
But that's because the Camogie Association's response was so bad.
Yeah, you know,
they were saying nothing
year.
Will happen until 2027. You know, and now they're saying 2026. So I think there is going to be
a special
derogation.
Yeah.
The 22nd.
Well, like, I think it's just kind of bizarre as well because, like, there's been, like, people have been, it's been well documented now how retaining girls, young girls in sport has been such an issue, particularly when they come to teenage years. And that obviously has lots of impacts on health and, you know, socialization and various other factors. So I just can't really understand why they wouldn't just roll over on this, really. Like, it's what the players want. And also, just like in terms of sending a message, I can't think of any other sport that certainly the kind of Western world would play whereby women are required to wear something like a skirt or like something different to their male counterparts. It just doesn't make any sense. And like, I played Camogie briefly in my youth or whatever. But sure, I had two brothers who were playing hurling, and like, it's literally just an optics thing, because also then you don't feel like you're taken as seriously because, you know, like, you have to wear something different. It's, I don't know why. And considering in the context of the Camogie Association wants more girls in sport, it wants girls playing, like, why wouldn't they just do anything they can to kind of bring the people along with them?
Lorraine?
Yeah, and like Sarah, I also played Camogie a long time ago, and it's hard to think that, you know, years and years later we're still dealing with it. I've spoken to some Camogie players who actually like wearing it. They're in the minority. If they want to continue, they should be allowed to continue if that's their choice. But the vast majority of players, from the very start to the inter-county players, they don't want to wear it, and I think they should be respected. It's hard enough to retain girls in sport. It's something that the government has been trying to support by linking sports capital grants with clubs and their efforts to retain women and girls in sport. And like, a lot of women, say for our age, didn't actually even get an opportunity of sport growing up. Yeah. There was very few opportunities to partake in sport when I was growing up.
And the changing rooms.
And,
across
the board, things have improved, but we have a long way to go and we have a lot of history to make up. And even now, women in their 20s, 30s, 40s and beyond who didn't have an opportunity of sport when they were younger should be encouraged back into sport.
Does anyone know how the hockey players feel about their skorts? Because they wear skorts as well.
It's
a different game.
Players, I assume, as well, where this goes. But
it's
a different
game.
It is a different game, and I think that is part of it. It's just that the camogie is so physical.
You're in close.
More rough and tumble.
Yeah, you're more likely to fall over, or, you know. So, but I mean, at the end of the day, you listen to the players. If hockey players want to wear a skirt, that's their choice, and that, I think, is the crux of it. It's the players who are out there who should have the choice to wear what they're comfortable playing.
The fact
the game
that this has preoccupied so many people this week, I kept kind of in my mind rolling fast forward, maybe to as near a date, maybe a 6 months' time, and thinking we look back at this and say, what on earth was that all about?
It's like something from Father Ted.
It really is
the lovely girls competition as they go out and play a physical game. Like, it's bizarre. It's harking back to a bygone time. But let the delegates hear what the clubs have to say. I know a lot of clubs in my own area have issued statements. I hope those delegates who made a decision a year and a half ago will reflect on the clubs in their area and bring that message.
Will they have to lay down rules about the shorts? I mean, there are shorts and there are shorts. You know, hot pants versus Paul Mescal shorts.
I can't think of any woman who would want to play camogie wearing hot pants now. Like, I'm sure they'll be going the bog standard O'Neill shorts.
They weren't very flattering on Paul Mescal, I thought. But anyway, that's...
Well, that's where we disagree.
I deserve it. All right, look, there we have to leave it. Don't forget, our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the News Talk app, powered by GoLad. And my thanks to our panel for dropping in today, to Lynn Boylan, to Sarah McGuinness, and to Lorraine Clifford-Lee. Thank you, one and all. Congratulations to today's winner of the two-night stay at Faith Lake Hotel, Jimmy Dunn from Carlow, who had the correct answer that Jim's surname is Halpert. My thanks to our team, editor Emer Bradley, the senior producers Claire Darmody, the producer Niamh Dunn, researchers Keane Burns and Dylan Hand, broadcast assistant Amber Kane, Cormac McDonough on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.